Hello, musicians, gamers, and friends. Welcome to the Plus Music Podcast. Today, we're sitting down with Sam Gribben, the CEO of Melodix. After leaving his position as the CEO of the world-famous DJ software company Serato, Sam decided to use his knowledge of music production and software to pioneer a new educational tool for musicians of all skill levels. His new venture, Melodix, is designed to lower the barrier of entry for musicians using one-of-a-kind, gamified software design to teach basic skills through fun challenges. Leading the charge on this new approach to online interactive education, Melodix aims to make the dream of learning an instrument or producing a track a reality for anyone. We chat with Sam from his home base in Auckland, New Zealand about all things Music 3.0 and the gamification of music education. All of this and more today on the Plus Music Podcast. Let's just jump right into it. I mean, number one, we got a little bit of familiarity with you, Sam, because I think both Nick and I have done guest DJ spots in our music career. Definitely use Serato, which we know is spent about 10 years at it. I know the 7 years as a GM, 3 as CEO. Very good. And but we're anxious to hear more about Melodix, your current project here. Looks really unique from what I gathered from it. It's a really cool interactive way to learn instruments, a la kind of GarageBand style, making it almost gamifying learning music, which seemed really interesting to me. But why don't you give us, in your own words, a little background and description of how you got here, how you started, all the fun tidbits and bullets.
Yeah, I will. Well, my parents were very patient with me and allowed me to have lots of music lessons, which I think I would do a month or two on an instrument and then be like, no, and then pick up another one and no. So I went through them all. I don't know how they put up with me as a parent myself now. And then when I was at Serato, I was working with a lot of musicians and artists. And at that point, you know, when I was at university, college, I got really into DJing. And I was studying electrical engineering. So I kind of had this idea. It's like, oh, wow, you could DJ with vinyl, but have music coming off a computer. That would be really, really cool. You know, so this was the the 90s. And MP3s were a new thing. Yeah, I'm really showing my age here. So I was learning about kind of technology and radial encoders and engineering, and at the same time DJing, and at the same time ripping CDs. You know, I had a friend with a tower computer that had 3 CD drives, and you could rip 3 CDs at once. It was amazing.
Brilliant.
So I became quite obsessed with this idea of being able to DJ using vinyl, but having music off a computer. But I didn't, I mean, and I studied engineering. I didn't have the technical skills to do it. I just had this, like, I think this is a thing. And then fast forward many years. In fact, almost exactly 10 years, I ran into the founders of Serato, who had done it, and convinced them to give me a job. So, spent a lot of time there. I was there for 10 years and worked with some amazing musicians, amazing artists. And even then, what frustrated me is I was spending a lot of time, in this case, DJing, which is not exactly learning to play a musical instrument, but it is, has certain overlaps. And I was trying to learn to do things, and I was putting in the time and practicing a lot, but not really getting any better. And I'd go to these trade shows, I'd go to the NAMM show, and I'd have these incredible DJs who would be working at the booth with us, like A-Track and Shorty and DJ Revolution and the Beat Junkies, and like, and they'd give me like DJ lessons in the downtime, scratching lessons in the downtime on the booth. And I was like, yeah. I've got the time, I've put the time in, I've got all of the equipment I could possibly dream of. I've got these amazing teachers, and I'm just not really getting better. I'm pretty sure all I'm doing is just reinforcing all my old bad habits. And so I just kind of got stuck in a rut and felt the same thing about, you know, I've always been quite keen to play bass guitar and keys and, various other things, same sort of thing. Anyway, so, after 10 years at Serato, I wanted to do my own thing and start something new. And I was seeing a few different things happening at that time. One was that education in general was being really transformed by technology. But that hadn't happened in the world of music. It was kind of slow to happen in the world of music. Also, though, the industry was seeing education as not just a kind of secondary afterthought, but a much, much more important part of the whole, you know, like there's almost as much of an industry in learning how to use all of the gear and Pro Tools and Ableton Live and all of these tools. Then there is actually making them. So saw that as an important space. Played a lot of Guitar Hero back in the day and always thought, like everyone else, I think, it's like, this is cool. Well, wouldn't it be cool if I could learn to play an actual guitar? And then kind of the other thing, and probably the actual trigger, was looking at products like Fitbit and Headspace and Nike Run Club, Strava and Duolingo and Calm and et cetera, et cetera. And they were all using these methods to help people to do something that they really wanted to do, you know, like get fit or learn a language or achieve inner peace. But needed, you know, were struggling to do or needed a bit of an extra motivational kick. And I thought, it's like, there's a lot of parallels between learning a language in particular and learning to play an instrument, I think, in mm-hmm. that, you know, you kind of feel like you suck at it for mm-hmm. a long time. It's kind of a little bit uncomfortable. You don't want to do it in public until you've kind of got it. Mm-hmm. So many parallels. And I was seeing the success of Duolingo and Babbel and products like this. And I was like, why is no one doing this? Why is no one doing it for an instrument? You know, so it makes total sense to me. And I looked around and there were a few at the time. This was like 2014. But I felt like no one was completely nailing it. And so,
agreed.
You know, that's really where the idea came from.
So let me ask you, you know, some product questions then. Like, what was the insight, or what was the difference that you guys were trying to go after versus what was there already? Like, you mentioned Duolingo. Like, that's a, you know, it's a great example of how to gamify learning a language, right? And they had and those guys came out of Google, right? I think that guy invented the CAPTCHA, the Duolingo guys. And they did like the one where they were like translating the New York Times through the CAPTCHAs. If you remember, like, it would show you some words, and every time you validated those words, it was basically reading old New York Times and digitizing them, right? So it's super smart, like just business that they had on top of the validation thing that they made, which was like genius, right? So I think they've now digitized all the old print stuff at this point, but
using that method.
Wow. And they were doing that validation for Google Vision too. So, you know, like Street View, they'd be like, is this set of numbers the street address? And it's like validating the computer vision. And that's all they're doing now too. And you're like, is this a palm? Pick the palm trees in these 4-7 pictures. You know, it's like,
yeah,
it's just doing their AI and it's human validation for a lot of that stuff. But like, you know, from a product point of view, what did you guys want to do different? What did you feel like your angle was when it came to making music fun to learn again, or, you know?
Yeah, there was quite a lot. I thought a lot about our approach, what my approach would be. I think it was heavily influenced by the time I'd spent in the industry. Mm-hmm. And in that time working at Serato, we had worked with a lot of partners, a lot of, you know, kind of really DJ equipment manufacturers, but many of whom were also instrument manufacturers in the more broad sense. There's quite a big overlap there. And so that made quite a big difference, because the way I approached it was by thinking about it as a kind of a partnership model, like, how could we help these companies that are building instruments to make their customers more successful? Because that's what everyone wants, really, is like, you know, you mm-hmm. make a electronic drum kit or a MIDI keyboard or whatever it is, and you sell it to a customer, and you know, and like you speak to these people, they really, what they want is for that customer to like get into it and use it and enjoy it and have some success and make some stuff that they're happy with, and you know, not necessarily release a platinum album or become a genius level maestro, but just like enjoy it, engage with it, get something from it. So that influenced it a lot, and it meant that I was working with those manufacturers from the very get-go. I wanted to start, you know, like from a kind of a more from a business point of view, start in a small area and grow from there as a kind of a really kind of that was our strategy. And so I chose finger drumming, which a few people thought I was kind of crazy. It's like,
you mean like from a MIDI keyboard app, like a MIDI keyboard finger drumming style?
No, more like a pad controller, you know?
Yeah.
Like a 4x4 pad controller. Or, I remember a good friend of mine told me recently, I thought you were crazy when you first suggested that. But it was because being in the industry, I saw that this is a product category had just exploded.
Yeah. Hip hop was using that. Yeah.
MPDs, but also like pads were on all of the DJ equipment, all of the controllers, and pads were more and more on all of the keyboards, on the MIDI keyboards. So everything had these pads all of a sudden, but it was like, well, what are you supposed to actually do with them? And there was like half a dozen people on YouTube just absolutely killing it, shredding it, doing these amazing performances, like really a small number of people. And then everyone else, the rest of the world, like me, going, that looks cool. Where do you start? So by making it really focused on that area, like just from a kind of a startup point of view, it means you can be really focused and be really clear about who your customer is and what you're trying to do. It's quite straightforward, you know, and you're not trying to be everything to everyone. And I'd also worked with lots and lots of artists at the time that I was at Serato. So had this idea of like, wouldn't it be cool to learn these finger drumming lessons from people like DJ Jazzy Jeff or Diplo, or
so like masterclass style, but for fringe
a little bit,
you know?
Yeah. For music producers. And so what was different, I think, was like coming at it from kind of a within the industry point of view, and from a more of a like certainly different audience. Our audience was, and to a large extent still is, the music creator, as opposed to I want to learn to play this song on the guitar. It's like I'm making music. So it was much more like, we will help you build the skills to get more out of your instrument, rather than we're going to help you learn to play this song. The music itself, I think, was a huge part of it. We really invested in and continued into like at a kind of production level of what you would hear on the radio or listen to on Spotify or hear at a club. Like, I think that was the big thing that has been missed and has been missing from kind of music and education in general for a long time.
Absolutely. I mean, it brings me back to, my parents forced piano lessons on me when I was a kid. Now, of course, I love playing piano, but I quit because it was like, give me some songs that I want to learn how to play on piano. It was like, well, today we're going to teach you The Rose, or, you know, like kind of these old musical theater pieces, Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. And you're like, this is not captivating my attention, but you nailed it, bringing in music that people know and listen to and love already.
Interesting. And so you guys, that's a cool angle too, to work with the manufacturers of the products. And so that was your first customer was them then, was the actual manufacturers? Yeah,
pretty much. It was kind of, we were able to do that and then set up how we were going to reach people before we actually started building the product. So we could work kind of with them a lot. It's like, what do you think your customers want? You know, kind of. And the person that we were really kind of aiming to talk to is that person that's got maybe a computer and a pair of monitor speakers and an audio interface and a MIDI keyboard in front of them, maybe with some pads on it, you know, and they're making music and they're having a good time, and they are, you know, so they're already doing it, and maybe they're, you know, using sample libraries and they're kind of drawing in sequences with their mouse. And it's like, if you could brush up your skills on actually playing that keyboard, which is probably sitting in front of you and you're kind of using it a little bit, then your workflow will change. It'll be faster, better. What you create will be more organic. It'll be more you. You'll probably make more mistakes, and those mistakes will turn into ideas. And, you know, like, yeah. it was just kind of, you've got the gear. Now we're going to help you get more out of it.
Yeah, that's cool. And so did the manufacturers help you a little bit with distribution too? Like, they got the word out to even their customers?
Exactly.
They're incentivized, right? So that's cool.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it's a really great relationship where they help us reach the right people, and we help them to give those people something extra that comes with their instrument. It's a pretty simple partnership, but it's brilliant.
It sounds like, you know, it sounds like then you took some of the lessons that you learned at Serato, and maybe, do you feel like you were able to identify the product, customer, and map like a lot faster than maybe you would have if you just started out? Like, what was the, going back to the Serato days, I'm sure every company seems to have like these plateaus that you need to get over. Like, when you joined, it was, I think it said four, you were like employee number four or five, right?
Yeah.
Where were they at that moment? Or is it still an idea? Were they just built it and just kind of releasing it and not really in traction yet? Or where were they at?
My timing was amazing. I joined just before they released the first DJ product. So up until that time, they'd been really successful as a small business making a Pro Tools plugin called Pitch and Time, which was really famous.
I said that earlier. I said, wait, is this the same as Serato Pitch and Time? And everybody said, no, it's a DJ software. I used that constantly. It was a great plugin.
I remember there was a period kind of in the middle there where people would go, oh, Serato. And it was kind of like a 50-50 split. They'd either be a producer, a Pro Tools expert, and they'd use it in the studio, or they'd be a DJ. And Pitch and Time's still going strong 20 years later. It's an amazing product. So when I joined, I joined as general manager, which is kind of like an operations role. It's a bit of a New Zealand or English kind of job title. And my first jobs were to find us an office, because we were in the basement of the founder's house, and hire an accountant and write the user manual and organize the beta testing. And it was like just before going to market. So Steve and AJ, the founders, had already done the licensing deal with Rain, which was that first major partner, and they were ready to release it. And then I just came in and helped with the kind of how it launched.
Did you guys, I don't know the story arc of that company, but did it sort of just keep going up and to the right, as they say, in the business world? Or was it like, you guys launched and then what happened?
It did. I mean, it was, I knew at the time that it was an unusual company, but now, having started my own company, I kind of appreciate that even more. It was like almost immediately successful and just grew and grew and grew, which doesn't happen, you know, like it's a very rare thing, but it was an amazing product. It had really great support from the community and from the DJs, and it was like very much like right time, right place. And we just, it was like a bull on a rope keeping up with the business. It was, you know, a real success. I think a lot of that came down to the fact that the people who got the most from it were touring DJs. So they were the best of the best DJs. And then, at that time, the thing that they all loved about it was that you could fly around the world without all of your crates of records. Mm-hmm. So you didn't have all of this hassle at airports, the risk of losing everything, like literally everything if your baggage doesn't show up, which it often didn't. And so we'd get all these shout outs for helping them to save their bag. And then, you go to a gig and you see your hero on stage using this at the time, like highly risky, highly like, really, would you actually use a computer to DJ with? And there they are at the biggest venues and the biggest artists, and they're doing it. And so just word spread through that community like wildfire.
Yeah, so it was more of a pro tool than it was a consumer tool initially.
Yeah, at the beginning.
And then, absolutely. Yeah, and then you guys went mobile and started rolling it out. And then I think, if I remember, there was a Spotify integration for some time. Like you could log into your Spotify and kind of DJ with it.
Yeah, I use that now. It's with Tidal. Because I kind of gave up on my DJ career because the hardest part is like keeping your music fresh and keeping up to date. And I remember like switching laptops at one point and kind of getting away from using iTunes as my music player and going to Spotify. And suddenly I just didn't have all my kind of crates, my playlists, my collection. And actually I got COVID earlier this year and had to go into isolation and had it really quite mild and was like, oh, now's the time, and got out took a DJ controller with me and sat down and just put it together like a 12 track little set. I was like, I'm away again. And that's, using the Tidal integration is super cool because it's just everything.
Oh, that's great. I love the idea. I don't want to jump too far ahead, but I can't get it out of my mind only because I've got kids and I've sold chocolate bars, I think twice this year, just to keep a music program in their schools. You know, it's kind of the first thing here in America that they chop in budget cuts. But like gaming is an educational tool. This could be perfect for like keeping the music program problem in schools with melodics, you know?
Yeah.
Shifted away from Serato there into melodics, but just the here's your lesson, play along, gamify it, and less need for big budget for instruments in the school program, less need for music expert to come in who, and you need a music expert with patience. That's the biggest part of teaching. You could solve many problems, and I'm sure it's probably on your roadmap, but if not, you're welcome.
Yeah.
Have you pitched schools and things like that?
Yeah. And with, you also need music teachers with tech skills. Cause I think more and more, we talked earlier about the relevance of modern music and for education, but also there's this kind of drive to expose the kids to tech, or the kids really want to. So I've got GarageBand at home. Can you show me how to do it? And a lot of teachers are like, some of them are really up with that. Some of them don't know quite how to get into there and where to start. So I'll take a tiny step back into kind of a bit more of the origin of it, because how we work with teachers and educators has become a really big part of who we are now. So I remember actually a good friend of mine who's an amazing pianist and keyboard player, a guy called Mart Clive Lowe, he challenged me when it was still just conceptual. It's like, how are you going to actually teach people? Because, technique is so important. And are you going to have some sort of like cameras and augmented virtual reality so you can see what they're doing and give them feedback on their posture and stuff like that? And I was like, well, that sounds really hard. And no, I don't think I can do that. And so we kind of riffed on the idea a lot more. And it was kind of at that point, I went really down this path of focusing on practice. And I talked about how frustrated I was with the amount, I did my 10,000 hours on the turntables and never got any good because I was practicing the wrong way and practicing the wrong things. And so really focused on this idea that you need to practice. If you practice, you'll get better. And if you don't practice, you won't get better. And like no one's ever pulled me up on that. It's like, oh, I'm not so sure about that. It's kind of like self-evident, right? So how do we help people to practice? My personal theory that this whole thing is based on is people give up because they don't practice. They don't practice because it's not much fun and they don't feel like they're making progress. even though they are, and it's kind of back to that language learning analogy, you've got to just kind of work through it. And there's this perception that the practice is kind of this horrible thing that you have to do, and then you'll pop out the other end as a musician. So it's all about like, well, how do we show people that the practice part can actually be really enjoyable and you are actually making progress? And we're going to show you that you're making progress so that you keep like reinforcing this loop, and that practice in itself as a method and the science behind practice has advanced a huge amount in the last 10, 20 years. There's this thing called deliberate practice, which is used in athletics a lot, you know, and you see Steph Curry shooting these amazing three-pointers over and over, and you kind of dig into how does he practice, and there's methodology behind that. So we're applying that methodology to learning to play instruments. And if we can keep the practice fun and make it efficient and effective, and like don't do what I did, which is spend 10,000 hours practicing the wrong thing. And like as soon as you're making mistakes, like nope, stop, course correct, you know, that's a really big part of it. So feeding back that progress and become like a really amazing practice tool. So then when we launched, I think at the early days it was quite a bit of perception of like we're competing with teachers or with educators, but more and more, and over the years, those teachers have come to us because they kind of they get this, that what we're doing with practice. And it's like, this is a dream come true because I can teach and you can help me to get the students to actually practice, because none of them do, even at a kind of a college level.
There's an interesting thing about gamification of it, right? Like you were talking about something that made a lot of sense. It said, you were like, you know, cause I remember learning things. Learned a lot of different stuff, music instruments, whatever languages. There's always those plateaus where you're not really sure if you're getting better and you don't know. But what a game's able to do is give you much more real-time feedback and even like artificially make you feel like you're making progress when you may be flat, right? But you still have to get through those flat moments to get to the next level. That's just rehearsal, right? A lot of times.
It's 100% about those plateaus, you know, like I'm working on drumming at the moment. I'm loving learning drumming and the kind of limit independence and the kind of being able to do a different thing with my right foot and my left hand is driving me crazy. But, you know, every drummer and drum teacher I speak to is like, that's one of the big barriers. And once you get that, it unlocks this whole other world. So how do we kind of stop people, help them not give up at that point, and then kind of guide them through it. What tools that we make to help them just like chip away at that until they kind of get those skills and then they're on to the next level.
So,
you know, back to teachers, we work with educators a lot. We work with Berklee College of Music doing with them on their curriculum design. And we have like had somewhat unexpectedly, because it wasn't at that time anyway, we were too small for it to be part of the plan. But teachers have really come to us and wanted to use Melodics in the classroom, which is great.
Yeah. What's next for the company, for you guys? Like, what are you working on next, except for just expanding out?
Harp. How to learn harp?
Yeah, I mean, harp's up there with bagpipes. Not sure which... which way we go next. the big thing for us is music licensing, because we've grown to the point that we have so far without music licensing. In fact, my backdrop, you can't see my backdrop if you're listening on audio, but it's we use it for our songs launch, which is we now have a licensing deal to be able to use popular songs. And that has really taken it to the next level.
Are you using the masters or recordings of the recordings?
So yeah, we have publishing licenses, but it makes a huge difference, you know, like to be playing along the, my drumming is, progress is currently being driven by learning to play Still Dre, which is
The hip hop. Yeah.
And what else have we got? Anyway, it's really, really fun. It's a lot more fun with songs that you know. It's just
for sure.
There's nothing like it really. So
yeah.
What am I learning? On the keyboard, I'm learning Drake, Passion Fruit, and Porter's Head, again showing my age. That's been a huge change. And that's just we've had that out for about a month.
So how do you gather that music? Do you do like an audience poll? Who do you want to hear? What do you want to learn? Or is it all just your guys's picks?
We're putting together a website at the moment to like make the a request line section of our mm-hmm. website a bit more official. We somewhat constrained by the licensing, because licensing mm-hmm. is really hard, and turns out that quite a few songs have like 50 writers credited on them. So if you want to get crazy? Clearance, the person who was sitting in the studio keeping the drinks cold gets mm-hmm. 0.5% of the writing. So you got to get clearance.
That's why you got to just license music from the 70s and 80s. No kids today would like it, but probably 2 to 4 writers on there.
Oh, I don't know. Well, you know what? We've got Running Up That Hill by Kate Bush at the moment. Very, nice. Very popular.
Yeah. It's a resurgence for that track, for sure.
Yeah. But the selection process is mostly driven by our music team. We have a in-house music and education team. They do all of the content creation, like the lessons.
Very cool.
And they are music teachers. Each instrument has an instrument lead. So we have Alex, who's a drum teacher before he came here. Crystal, who does the keys. Ruby, who does the pads lessons. And they are looking at the curriculum, and they're doing data analysis on how people move through the curriculum. And they're saying, okay, you know, so once you're at this kind of level and you're working on triplets or chord inversions or whatever it might be, we need some lessons that cover that, and we can turn that piece of music into that lesson, drive that learning outcome, together with the marketing team of like, this would be really cool, this is really popular, we can tell a great story about it. I could have got some cues. Outkast, James Brown, Doja Cat, Jamiroquai.
It looks like on the left, when on your right, if you go on there, is that Adam Sandler right there?
No, it's the dude from System of a Down.
I'm just kidding.
Does kind of look like Sandler. Yeah.
Lord. Lord. It's a mix of kind of what's popular and what people want to play, and then what can we teach using that.
A difficulty level.
Yeah, and actually then quite generally what we will do is for that one song, create beginner, intermediate, advanced, so that we can cater to lots of different levels, and also so that you can start at some point and kind of progress up through it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Great. You've been in music and tech for a while. What are you excited about outside your business and outside what you guys are doing? What do you think is really interesting? Like you guys are helping a bunch of new musicians make music, right? Biggest problem for music and musicians that I've seen and we've seen is a place to do it commercially and as a profession, right? Like you get really good at it and you become professional, and then very few people can make a living at it because there's very few places to do it, right? There's only so many stadiums and large venues in each city. There's only so many radio stations. There's only so many hours that you can listen to Spotify, whatever. Outside of the things that we already know, like do you guys just geek out and think about what's next for music?
Yeah, a lot. A lot.
Good, because that's what we do.
I think one of the things that's really interesting is the kind of change in the models and the change in the way that the business is conducted. And over the last couple of years, there's been a massive boost to the creator economy more generally. And so, you know, you can make money, good money, from having a really great Twitch audience, for example. And you can live stream your creation process and earn money from that. You can earn money from lots of different places. You know, the thing I kind of come back to is the world consumes a huge amount of music. The world listens to music. The world uses music in advertising and films and all sorts of places. And yet it's a lot of people are passionate about creating music. So you've got this kind of massive demand for it and these people who are really passionate about creating it, and yet it doesn't work. And yet no one can make a living out of it. You know, like it's broken. And I think,
yeah,
it has been broken for some time.
The value chain is pretty messed up. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's been an industry built around it that is really powerful, quite antiquated. You know, it's taken us years to get licensing. I've turned up. It's like, here's my checkbook. I want to pay for this music. I want the artists who make the music to get paid. Show me where to put the money. And they're like, well, we can't do that. No. And I feel like that is
weird, right? It's so strange. The music industry has always felt like there's a moat, and there's like opportunity and money on the other end of that moat, right?
Mm.
And or it's weird. It's just a strange way to do business. But
it's been well protected by a group that has really benefited from it. But it's not exactly democratized. So, you know, like the NFT thing, which I don't claim to understand, I don't really get my head around that. However, some of the concepts there are super exciting. Like, I think there is a willingness from fans to support the artist directly. I think Bandcamp has been really successful, in part because it's like, well, I know that more of my money is actually going to that artist, and that's what I want. And there's a willingness from fans to kind of own something from the artist. You know, merch is really big. NFTs, wow, try and get your head around that. So, you know, the idea of a fan base saying, we're going to invest in this artist and help you to make music and help you to build your career and help you to be successful. And we're along with you. But also, if you become a massive star, then there's something in it for us, you know, like this. I don't know how these models are going to pan out, but I think there is so much exploration going on and so much kind of willingness to change. It's going to be good.
Yeah. I think the NFT thing it's going to evolve quite a bit. I mean, it's basically collectibles, right? Right now, that's all they're running off of. The technology promise is pretty interesting though. From a licensing point of view, if an artist can make their music available via a smart contract, you don't need a middleman anymore to tell if blockchain actually worked how the promise of it would, like end to end, where, okay, my smart contract tells you if you can put this into a cigarette commercial or not.
Yeah.
And that smart contract would be enforceable all the way to making decisions. If those really do come into being, and there's so much energy on blockchain technology and there's so much funding going into it, I don't see how it's not going to be something, but it's going to take.
It's like the early days of the internet, right? Where there was lots of things happening. Some of them, many of them came to nothing, and some of them became like hugely impactful on everyone's lives.
Exactly.
I don't know what it's going to be.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I'm optimistic of it. I think what it's going to take is my sense is that artists are going to have to say old path, new path. And they're going to have to just go all the way in on the new path to be able to open up their music to those other opportunities. Because if they go down that road, mm-hmm. gets them into the old moat, and there's just going to have to be new successes, and there'll have to be enough of those to actually shift the industry to change, right? But we'll see. Yeah. We'll see. You mentioned audio format way back, and it's as we wrap up geeking about that. Like if MP3s came out and got popular, 20 years ago or something? It's like a long time, but kind of recent. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
music has been digital in digital format now for quite some time, but
yeah,
it's also an old file format, not very useful. It only does one thing, just plays music.
Yeah.
Right. So it seems like technology is going in a different, it needs more out of digital files, right? It needs more things to be. And that's what the smart contract and the in an NFT could potentially represent. They tend to be heavyweight though, if they contain any file or that, right? So
yeah,
there's something there, but it feels like that also could change and make music a little bit more useful. It'd be kind of cool.
Yeah. Do you mind if I take that idea and run with it in a slightly different direction? Go
Please.
Down a little bit of a rabbit hole and talk about music and technology more generally and kind of in a historical context, because this is something that we talk a lot about at Melodix, is that not so long ago, like in terms of human history, given how long music has been part of human history, 100 years ago, maybe 150, music was something that people did. And generally it was something that they did together. You know, you'd have a piano in the lounge if you were wealthy enough, and you'd get around and play it and sing songs. And it was a really social activity. And it was, you know, I think kind of really part of human existence.
Yeah.
And along came the gramophone just over 100 years ago. And it really changed, you know, that technology really changed it from being an experience into being a product. Mm-hmm. And music became something that you consumed. And an industry came out of that. And then a career came out of that. And, you know, we talked about that industry and how hard it's been to disrupt. But then we kind of moved into this world where there were these musicians, and they were kind of other people, only parts of the world, you know, in many parts of the world, it's still a real social activity and part of the community. But say, for example, in the West and the US, it's something that some people do. You know, we've talked a lot here inside Melodix about what this word musician actually means, and so loaded. And, you know, people want to learn to play an instrument, but being a musician is kind of hard. I think that we think there's a real opportunity to kind of bring back this thing which has always been there. Sorry, please excuse the fire engine going past.
So good.
To bring back this thing which has always been there of like musicking as a verb, as an activity, as something that people do, and not just something that you consume. And I think it's like, it's not that far away. And you know, like 50 years ago, the benefits of a healthy lifestyle were not widely understood. And you had these people called athletes, and they were the people who did the running and the jumping and the athletic stuff. But then along came jogging, and along came these companies like Nike and Adidas. And, you know, I'm wearing a pair of Nikes right now, but I didn't run to work, and I'm probably not going to run anywhere today. So, I warned you it was a bit of a rabbit hole, but
yeah,
you know,
I think
there is an opportunity and that we very much want to be part of, to do what has happened in kind of that world of physical fitness and activity, where it's not something that just some people do, something that everyone does. You know, like if I went to the gym once a month, maybe once every 2 months, or even if I went once a week, I wouldn't be called or labeled a athletic person or a something. I'd just be living a healthy lifestyle. And I really think that music can and should be seen in the same way. You know, it's like you can pick up a guitar and play three chords and do a sing-along doesn't mean that you have some special status or you've achieved something that other people can't achieve. It's just normalizing it and bringing it back to how it has been for generations.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you're saying, if I could read that back to you, is what you're saying, that you can imagine a world where more people are musicians, quote unquote, like they can do music.
Yeah.
And interesting. And then do you think like in the world of VR and AR that gets easier or different?
I think there's lots of really interesting opportunity for AR in particular to help with learning. But also we have chosen, even though we work with finger drumming and pads and MIDI keyboards and electronic drums and this kind of like techie cutting edge aspect of learning instruments, we're still very much about, it's about learning to play a physical instrument. It's mm-hmm. about being able to sit down at a drum kit, hold some sticks and bang on them and make noise as part of that experience. It is kind of old school in a way, what we're trying to do. We're not trying to create a new instrument that's easier to play. We're trying to give people that joy and satisfaction and great experience that comes with playing.
I love that.
Actual instruments. Even though they're modern instruments and the instruments will change, you know. But maybe, yeah, the harp, the bagpipe. Trombone.
Hey, AC/DC, Bon Scott. There was some serious bagpipes in rock and roll. So I know we got to wrap up here. But Sam, I've been dying to ask you, hey, I want to get my kids on this. How would somebody go get Melodix? Where do we go?
Go to melodix.com, download it. And there is a free aspect to it. There's 20 free lessons and you can play that as long as you like. There's a time limit of 5 minutes a day if you're not a subscriber, but actually 5 minutes a day is basically what I do. Our whole kind of mentality is 5 minutes a day is better than an hour once a week. And you can use it on your laptop without an instrument if you just want to try it out, but it is really designed for an instrument. And at the moment we work with pad controllers, MIDI keyboards, and electronic drums of any brand.
Excellent. Very cool. Great to
chat with you, Sam. Thanks for taking the time all the way from Auckland, New Zealand.
My pleasure. So it's Friday morning there, is it?
Yeah, we live in tomorrow.
That's so great. Can you give me the score of tonight's Thursday night football game here in America?
No, but I can tell you it's raining, right. So it might rain tomorrow.
There you go.
Excellent. Excellent.
Cool.
Right on.
Very cool, well, Sam.
Awesome, guys. Well, thanks for taking the time. It's good to chat and talk to you soon.
Thank you very much.